the session remaining to ask him questions and to hear his responses. We'll also get to have him for a half an hour after to continue with those who are able and inspired to stay. There's more opportunity to be with him and to hear from him. So we're very excited. It's bittersweet to come to this close. And we're also grateful that we have another opportunity next week, not next week, but the week after next week, to be together in person. So hopefully you can come and join us. So really, we're here to... Can everyone kindly mute? Thank you. Thank you very much. So we're here with the purpose of realizing who we really are. This is part of a weekly series that we run at UpBuild called Remembering Who We Are, for the purpose of understanding that we are the soul. We're not this body. We're not this mind. We're not our egos that tell us we're the mind and body and make us strive to project things that we are not. We are the soul, and we want to tap into that and live that way. We ask for everyone to take up a certain culture that will allow us to best receive that spirit and live in that way. So we have three pillars of the culture for our events. One is we ask for your full-hearted participation. Kindly let go of any distractions, diversions. Be with us, completely present. Videos on is ideal. If you can do that, it makes a big difference. We also want to see you and be together as a community. So your full-hearted participation, your respect, that this is a safe and sacred space. We all get to co-create. And your determination that we want to take something with us. When we leave this room, this virtual room together, we want to leave with something. And that requires that we set our intention, that we have some firm determination. So please kindly muster that. And I hope everyone is on board for the culture. Thank you. So you'll send your questions to Michael in the direct message through the chat, and we'll field and we'll call upon you when the time comes. And just a word about Satchinandana Swami, who is my guru and who has been one of foremost guides for us at UpBuild, a major inspiration behind our founding UpBuild in 2008 in the monastery where we founded UpBuild. He is a monk who's taken a lifelong vow of being a monk. He's been practicing for many, many years. He's been in monastic life for 51 years, and he travels around the world to share his learnings and the wisdom of the sacred texts and the path of bhakti yoga. He teaches meditation and is a wonderful kirtan singer, which is a form of musical meditation that we invite you to experience in New York City on May 24th for our event with him. And yes, I hope you have a wonderful time. Thank you for being with us. And now we'll start with Satchinandana Swami. Thank you so much for being with us. And thanks to everybody for being with us from around the world.
Yes, it is a bittersweet experience to close for now this beautiful session, which gave me the opportunity to remember some of my spiritual experiences. And you know, when we share experiences with a sympathetic audience, not only do we relive them, but it seems we can go even deeper into them. Now, to inspire you a little for your to ask questions that come, I would like to speak a little bit in general about spiritual experiences, you know, summarize some of what we have said, and then suggest means by which you can make your own spiritual experiences. Now, you must know that I mean, you know better than I that in the various cultures that are recorded in the archives of human history, there are a lot of spiritual practices which people have adopted in order to make spiritual experiences. These practices are influenced by cultural norms, psychological states, maybe social patterns, a climate also, seasons, agricultural and natural products, and so on, and differ from geographical location to geographical location. Some people prefer to pray, other people do meditation, yet other believe it is good to go over the body and have dances, yoga exercises, and various practices. In the Amazonas, people believe that to make spiritual experiences can be done by by taking certain medicinal drugs or other drugs to expand their awareness and so on. Some paint their bodies. I have done this today. Others pierce their skins and put tattoos on their skins. We might feel estranged at times when we compare our own understanding of spiritual practices with those of other cultures. But as we broaden our horizon, we will see elements of spiritual practices that are universally in practice. For instance, everywhere you use fire, for instance, in sacrifices or in lightning a lamp which you offer or an incense, you use the element water, perhaps to sprinkle sacred water on items and purify them, or even taking a bath in holy rivers like Ganges or the River Jordan is important for Christianity and the like. You find elements there in everyone. And the C.G. Jung, the psychologist, would say spirituality is embedded in the archetype of everyone. However, although spirituality has been practiced and is practiced all over, and anthropologists come up with newer and newer descriptions as they explore this subject. Although spirituality is so much part of the human nature, you see, it seems to be sometimes buried by what I call, and other spiritual traditions use a similar word, the small mind. The mind which is just fixed on maintaining the body, eating, you know, taking care of the needs of the body. I need something to eat. I need a sheltered place or an apartment. I need, I have needs for procreation. I like to have a family. And all our energy often, especially in modern times where these goods seem to be so difficult to procure or to get, all the energy is focused entirely on this small aspect of human existence, the body and its physical existence in the world. we need the vehicle of the body to move around, no doubt. But if we spend all our weekends polishing the car and never going somewhere on a holiday, our energy is misspent. Many people have found out that the energy of the human people is misspent on all these external things which are only of secondary importance. Therefore, an effort like this, become who you are, do I say it right, or I have the feeling I don't say it right?
Remembering who we are?
Remembering who we are, yes. It's very important. I would like to end these initial remarks with a poem that was written by, yeah, I must excuse myself, I can't speak Spanish, but it must sound like Juan Ramon Jimenez. He has written a poem saying, I'm not I. I'm this one standing beside me, whom I don't see, who at times I manage to visit, and at other times I forget. The one who listens quietly when I speak. I am no longer, he means his ego is no longer. I'm not I'm. I'm the one who will remain standing when I die. To invest in this identity, spiritual identity, which is foundational for everything else which happens in our life, is very important, but so much neglected in modern times. Even in spiritual practices, there are the conventional religious people, and then there are some serious spiritualists. The conventional religious people or conventional yoga person is focused on their identity and social position and the externals on whatever they follow. But a more advanced person is focused on the personality of the one with the thousand names, his charm, his name, his qualities that begins to pervade his whole existence. He becomes a god, intoxicated, saint. Here the word intoxicated, that means happiness. You can be happy, no? The conventional spiritualist and religionist will say, yes, spiritual life is part of my life, and perhaps on Sunday or when I have time after my important other things, then I will dedicate a section of my life and a place in my house to this spiritual practice. However, the more serious and committed person who is awakened from the illusion, they will enter the spiritual life. They will lose the sense of importance of the material life. They will only use the body and whatever they have to facilitate their happy involvement in spiritual life. Religious person, the conventional spiritualist, they will ask God always for something, give me this or give me that, or they will do a practice perhaps to build better muscles, you know, yoga, and to become more healthy and all this. But the more spiritual person will spend their spiritual the attention on one question. Kim Karomi, what can I do to exit illusion and enter the reality of my spiritual life? So, my dear everyone, when I shared my spiritual experiences, I wanted to always say, you can also make them. You may start in the beginning by adding them to what you do. But as you do them, you will see that they bring you results that feel more real, more vital, more interesting, more love-filled, perhaps, or more ecstatic. Do I dare to say this word in the static times? You know, they feel more fulfilling than what the world can give you. There are three basic principles in spiritual life, and those of you who take notes, this is your time now. The first is Shravana. You hear new information, and you should hear for a long time, and you should ask all your relevant questions in this time, because you need to remove doubts, or you need to have something so clear before your eyes that you can break through your habits that are sometimes chaining us to activities that are really harmful to us, that block our spiritual life. So Shravana, hearing, and Varana, accepting, after having, of course, asked all your questions and removed all your doubts, you can go to the next level. This is the second level. Hearing, questioning, accepting. That's how it starts. Now the second level. It's called sadhana, or spiritual practice. In the spiritual practice, two things are absolutely required. Focus and energy. If you put your focus on a spiritual practice after you have heard and about it, convinced yourself of the relevancy and the benefit, then you need to put your focus at least for some time of the day on it and give it your energy. For those who are never willing to leave their to close their notebooks where they have written notebooks, I mean conventional notebooks, things like this where you take notes nowadays, where notebooks are no, where apples are no longer apples and blueberries are no longer blueberries but telephones. I have to say what I mean. It's important to put your theory aside and go into the practice. Huh? Put your notes aside and go into the practice. And put some effort. However, listen now about this beautiful thing. The real spiritual things you cannot reach alone by your efforts. I have made a note. I hope I find. Yes, I feel. One saint has put it quite strongly before us. I've never seen anything come of ritual prayer, but the upright posture of the body. I have never seen anything good coming out of fasting, but that I became more hungry. Everything I have comes from His grace, not from my action. A man can produce nothing but exertion and activity. The happy person is he who stumbles suddenly upon a treasure and grows rich. Means God has put something before you and you get it. But there is a paradox here. On the one hand, we cannot attain anything without exertion. We must not let up on our spiritual practice and aspiration. On the other hand, the real gifts are given. How to bring this together? The spiritual person has to learn to be a receiver. He should not be in his ego mind, where he thinks, if I do this, then I achieve the kingdom of God. No, he does his efforts in an egoless, patient, gentle way, and then receives with his outstretched hands. Both. And then, yes, and then you come after sadhana or practice, which I have talked about, you come to your apanadas. Apanadas means achievements. Good. This is from my side. This will give you spiritual experiences. It will attract the inconceivable grace of the Lord. It will show him that you are sincere and serious. It will pierce through your layers and layers and layers and help you to bring your spiritual archaeology to some results, that you find something which is already present there. My dear everyone, you are children born of nectar. This is a verse from the Rig Veda. You are not meant to taste anything else but nectar. And therefore, awake and start to drink. Fine. Let us now see what is there in terms of questions. I will give my best to answer them in a succinct way.
Thank you so much. So the three steps for everyone that Satchinandana Swami is giving us to receive spiritual experiences are hearing, right? Really understanding the spiritual reality and learning about it, hearing, practice, doing something which will get us in contact with that reality as a daily part of our life, and really investing our focus and our energy. And then thirdly, the achievement comes, but it doesn't come through the sadhana or the practice. It comes from a gift from God. So at this point, let us take a moment to come up with a question that you would be eager to understand the answer to. So we'll all write something down, and then you can share your question with Michael. So let's all come up with something and give ourselves a moment to think, what am I eager to understand about spiritual experience or about Satchinandana Swami's spiritual experiences?
It sometimes helps to just do free writing. Free writing means there is no other rule than to keep on writing on this subject. What deeper questions do I have?
when something has come to you and you can finish noting it. If you need more time, you can, of course, continue to note your questions as we go. But I hope that something has occurred to you that was not here before. We're going to start now with Casey. Please ask your question, Casey.
Thank you so much for everything you've shared this whole series. My question is, how do we know we've chosen the right spiritual path for us?
There should be three results on the on your spiritual path that will show you that you have chosen the right one. First is you will feel some type of experiences that nourish you on your spiritual life. There should be some nourishment, something which fills your heart and your mind with contentment and nourishment. The second is there should be some type of experiences of God. And the third is you should be able to let go of things that are harmful for your spiritual life. When these three results are there, you can feel that you are on the spirit, you know that you are on the right path. The analogy which is given in this Shastras is that spiritual life should be like eating. First, in the eating experience, there may be some satisfaction. Then the second experience is that you become really nourished. And the third experience is that you will not be hungry any longer. You don't need to eat any longer. So when you practice on your own true path, you will also feel you will feel some nourishment, you will have some experience of God and the cessation of your constant flow of desires that pull you here and there and make you so dissatisfied should at least diminish.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to hear your sincere question, Casey, and I hope you are on your right spiritual path. I hope these things are coming. Wish this so much for everyone on this call, so that, yes, this is not a theory, this is not just a concept, the spiritual life, but it should be a practical experience. Yes, do we have another question?
On, would you kindly ask your question?
My question refers to the session when you shared about your experience with Srila Prabhupada. And I wanted to know, how did you approach him to become your spiritual master? And how were you feeling during the weight of his decision to accept you or not as his disciple?
Thank you very much. I took a year to make up my mind, and then it was quite simple. I wrote him a letter and expressed that I felt so nourished by his teaching, and I thought I'm able to commit my life to this path, and if he could please accept me as his disciple. But then no answer came, and I thought, oh no, maybe I did something wrong. I remember I added a little donation of 10 German marks. I was a poor monk. 10 German marks is something very small now, maybe $5, or I don't know, a very little. But no answer came. I didn't think I had given too little money, because I knew he was not after money. He didn't. That was not the reason, but perhaps there was something else. You know, he had told me I should finish my mundane education, but I had not done so because I felt it so extremely boring and unrelevant to my future life. So I had not followed him, and it was known to him that this boy from Germany has his own mind. Perhaps I've speculated he rejected me because I'm too independent-minded. Perhaps I did not know what. Then one day, I was not thinking on that day about initiation. I had resigned this to him, or to whomever you resigned to such a question. One day, a friend who was dear to me came running towards me. He had searched me in the entire city of Hamburg. I was not in the ashram at that time. I remember it was snowing on the day. It was very cold. It was very desolate Hamburg atmosphere. It's a little bit like New York winter. Very cold, very dark, very unpleasant, and inhospitable. Then I thought, so he came and he said, I got a letter from Srila Prabhupada. That was the affectionate name my spiritual master was known amongst his disciples. I said, do you know what's in there? He said, no, it's addressed to you. So we went to a library where it was a little warm, book library, and I opened the letter, and there it was. I accept you as my disciple. You are a very sincere boy, he said to me. He was very elderly, so for him we were all boys, you know, up to 30 years we were still boys. You know, you are a very sincere boy, and he told me what I should do as his disciple, what he expected of me, and that was easy. I did this already. And he said, you please contact this devotee, and then we can see how we will perform your initiation ceremony. That meant either in his presence or in his spiritual presence, you know. So we did this, and this is what I accepted, what I was. But I remember I was thinking, am I good enough? I think I'm disqualified. I remember this. You must know, this is what I learned. We are never disqualified for spiritual life. We may be unqualified in some areas, but we are never disqualified. Never, ever. We will find our spiritual teacher. And even if one teacher should have the intuition to say, I think your guru is somewhere else, then this is good for us. We don't need to approach this question, in other words, like we approach making an important relationship. for us. Maybe there is an author we want to be close to, or film director, or just someone whom we really have a lot of appreciation to, and then we think, oh, he will never invite me to travel with him to the Mediterranean Sea or something. You know, we feel therefore a little nervous and shaking. Will I be rejected like I have been rejected so many times in my life? No, this feeling doesn't need to be there. We will always be accepted no matter what qualifications have. Perhaps not by this particular teacher, but by our teacher who is already there for us. Because these things are who is our teacher, that is decided on a higher level. Thank you. What a wonderful question you have asked. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very touched by the question and the response. Thank you so much. It also, I hadn't heard these details, and very, very much struck me and put into perspective my own experience as well of asking you, Satchinandana Swami, for initiation. It really brought up a lot. I'm grateful. And it sounds like we have a lot of questions, which is exciting. So I hope that many of you will all stay present for the extra half an hour after 1 p.m. Eastern. We're going to go to Vipin now.
Sorry, I was on mute. Satchinandana Swami, the question that has been occupying me for the last few weeks is, how is it that one person, two people in the same place, witnessing the same thing, can have such dramatically different experiences of it? And I was thinking about, you know, you have shared moments when you have experienced something that others in that same place have not experienced, whether that is the light that you were seeing from Srila Prabhupada as he walked out from the jet bridge, or even walking in Hamburg and hearing the monks chanting Hare Krishna, and something that you felt that hundreds of others would have walked right past that same place without a thought. And the question that has been occupying me is, what is it that enables one person to see and hear what so many others don't? And is it our karma and our destiny, or is there something else also that we have a bit more agency around?
Wonderful question, Vipan. Wonderful question. It is very clear. Yes, there is a lot information about this perception. You have something in the Talmud which you have in Sanskrit. It says we don't see the world as it is, we see the world as we are. In Sanskrit this would be Atmavan Manyate Jagat. Everyone sees the world how he is really. This is a general answer, but you have now asked, this is true and generally, you find it everywhere. My spiritual master said once when he was a child, he saw how in Calcutta a hotel owner beheaded a chicken, and the headless chicken still ran in circles, and he was laughing and calling his friends, and it was so enjoyable, whereas another person cried to see that act of violence and the, you know, like this. So everyone see, this was a violent man. He takes pleasure in such visions or such things. But we are dealing now particularly with spiritual experiences, and for this you need particular eyes. there is a very important Samhita. Samhita means it's composed in a beautiful song-like way, the Brahma Samhita, and it says, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. You can only see when your eyes are opened with the balm of love. A little while ago, perhaps a month ago, I was under Ayurvedic treatment, and there was one treatment which was applied to the eyes. When it was on the eyes, I couldn't see anything, but after some time, I saw the world in new colors with the help of this ointment, this medical ointment. And the ointment which we require to see the spiritual experiences is love, or everything around that that word. See, in linguistics, you have a word, and then things that are in the field, around that field of the word. Let us give an example. For instance, love. There are other, this is maybe the central word, love, but around it are forgiveness, gratitude, non-judgment, etc. No? So, for your spiritual eyes, they may not always, you don't need to have always love. That's a high spiritual love, is a high level. But then you need to have at least some faith, and so on. There are very, very... Do you know how to drive a bicycle, Vipin?
Yes.
Swiftly and securely, or are you negotiating with the law of gravity when you drive a bicycle?
I don't know how to categorize myself, yeah. But I would say relatively swiftly and securely.
Yeah. See, when you go back to the day when you got it, how to drive a bicycle, there was all of a sudden some confidence that helped you to confidently pedal away, to create some speed, and because you need speed or energy, otherwise the thing falls, you know, and you fall with it on the ground. So in the same way in the spiritual life, you need some conviction in it, some, and then all of a sudden experiences are. This is true in about 80% of the cases, but then there's the rest of the 20% where spiritual experience might just come into your reality like an extraterrestrial who lands on Broadway and you see, who are you? And he goes, quack, 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 quack. You know, and in the same way, this spiritual experience may just land in your eyes. But mostly it is you practice and you get the confidence and the faith, and then you are in your spiritual practice. Mostly like that. But not always. It's so nice, Vipin and everyone on the call. What would be a God whom we can nail down with our logic, and our methods? That would be so boring, and also so mostly not transcendental at all. Yeah, good. Thank you, Vipin.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Adina. Would you please ask your question?
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your spirituality. It continues to be very moving and very inspirational. Thank you especially for your message today of being the receiver and the wonderful image of tasting the nectar. It was exactly the message I needed, exactly when I needed that reminder, so thank you for that. The question I have has to do with associating what seems to be a very powerful emotion. When I'm in a situation where I'm anxious about something, I try to experience it. I used to push things away. I try to be in that place, remain detached and observe it. But I find sometimes it's such a powerful energy that in a moment the energy of that emotion overtakes my spiritual desires. And I'm wondering if you can share any practices in those moments rather than logicking through it that I can spiritually go to be able to be more detached and less pulled by that energy.
You all have such wonderful questions. Yes, I can share a practice that I have learned and that I apply regularly. I will share it with you as I do it and encourage you to first try it, but then make some adjustments, if necessary, that suit your own situation. So, when we are anxious about something, it's very important that we take some time to or some peaceful situation out where we can deal with it. We have to address it. We have to confront it first. Or, let us use a better word, we have to accept it as it is. But for that, you might need some time. I would recommend to you that you find a time which is disturbance-free in your apartment or at home, and then you sit on the sofa or where is a comfortable, relaxing sitting situation. It helps to make a nice, comfortable atmosphere around you. Maybe the proper light, maybe whatever makes you feel relaxed. And then close the eye. And then the first step is, after preparing yourself, to face what you are anxious about, the exact situation that triggers the anxiety. Perhaps it's a person that makes you anxious, or just a reoccurring event in your life, or a particular circumstances. Bring that just near to you and sit next to it. It should be really there. It could be on the table or as graphically as you want it to be. For me, it is enough to just be aware of it and hold the image. Now comes the preparation, accepting. So we are at the third step. This is the most important step in it, and you might have to train it a little bit before, like bicycle driving, before you can do it. But what you do now is you step back from this situation, the person, the circumstances, or whatever it is that makes you anxious, and you enter with your awareness into your essential nature. Please listen now very attentively how to do it, because it's crucial that this step is understood. In your essence, you are a spiritual being in this material body. You are there making at the moment the human experience of an educated lady in America, and so on. But you are making this experience at the moment? Who is that you? And you come as close as possible to this being. I have written, finished a book, but it is now somewhere in the production effort with a meditation called Become Who You Are. And I thought to do this meditation with everyone when I come to New York, because it's so essential for us to exit the externals of our life and to enter our essential being. And as I said, it takes a little effort, or let us say a little practice, I wanted to say, before you can do it. For me, who meditates every day, it's very simple. I sit there, I relax my body, I breathe long and slow breaths. This already brings me into a more peaceful state of mind. Actually, you and everyone can try to do this with me. Let's be practical. You know, we are here with like-minded people. Let's try to slow down your breath. Long inhales, deep exhales. It will bring you into a more peaceful mindset. When you are ready, then you draw your attention away from the many things and bring it to your essential self, your true nature, that is part of something much, much bigger than the circumstantial anxiety or whatever we are concerned with at the moment. It helps to breathe through the heart or into the heart and see yourself as a light-filled being. Whenever you breathe in, the light becomes a little bit more pronounced, perhaps. Whenever you breathe out, you become a little bit more relaxed. And then you can do one of two things for beginning. You can send that light into the situation, the circumstance, to that person or whatever it is that is triggering that sense of anxiety. Or second, if that feels too, you're not ready to do this as of yet, you can just watch, or you can take the step back and look at it, and you will see it's not so bad as you think it is. It will dwindle in importance, become smaller. Finally, do a few deep, conscious breaths. And when you're ready, I didn't look at you at this, when I closed my eyes also, you can open your eyes, perhaps the eyes are already open. And then try to take the new perspective which you have gained into your life. I forgot your good name, but please be aware there is one rule in life. When you change the way you see things, the things change. It is because very often there are these situations to teach you a lesson. And if you learn the lesson, then the lesson itself is no longer important. Like when you know how to drive a car backwards into a parking space. They are not in New York, I know, but theoretically. Then the driving teacher doesn't need to say any longer. He says, okay, you know this, this is not. Then you have, he doesn't get on your case any longer. So in life also, once we learn a particular lesson, we see through it, then the lesson itself is no longer important. It dissolves. How this is so, it can only be explained with the subtle laws which govern our human existence that are much, much more strong than anything we as humans have ever come up with. Thank you for your very relevant question. I took some time because I think all of us are at times in this situation where we are simply overwhelmed by the circumstances and everything goes out of the window. Like the heat in our apartment when we open the window on a cold and New York evening. Oh, there's someone with us. Who is he?
She's Nessa, because the name Ness Hebrew is miracle, and she's a miracle in my life.
I can see, and she's very comfortable with you. Yes, thank you. Thank you
so much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. So we are going to come to our official close of the program now in the series. We're very, very grateful for all of your presence and participation. It's been moving for me. This has been a real dream of mine to be able to share Satchinandan Swami with this very precious community, with each of you. And I'm totally inspired. Thank you so much. We will come together in 2 weeks on Wednesday, May 24th, for Cultivating the Inner Life with Satchinandana Swami in New York City, 7 p.m. Please register. We are running out of spots. We're almost at the finish line, so please, please make sure that you're in there. We would love to have you, and we can't wait for more to come. Thank you for everything. And thank you to Satchinandana Swami. It's been incredible to have you with us. And now we get to continue with everyone who can remain. I hope lots of you can continue to ask your questions.
Mm-hmm. For those who have to go now, I considered this a great honor to share some of the experiences and insights that were given to me. I cannot claim to be the owner of them, the producer of them. They were given. And it's a great honor to share this. I just want to end with, because I always know you are in New York and you have a rigid schedule. I want to just say one thing. When nothing seems to work in your spiritual life, there's always one thing that will never fail, and that is sit, I would say poetically, like it is written in one ancient scriptures, sit at the feet of the wise people. Thirstily drink their every word. And when the cup of your heart is filled, and you drink from the wisdom inside, you will see God everywhere.
Thank you. So now we transition to let everyone go who needs to, and we're going to call upon Peter. You can stay with us. Please ask your question.
Peter, you're on mute. Peter.
Hi. Thank you, Maharaj. You are awesome. I love you so much, especially since you love New York so much, which is which is how I feel about New York as well, having been born and raised here. So, but I also love Germany. My question, Maharaj, is I'd love to know what your greatest spiritual challenge has been over your entire life as a monk.
It was about 25 years ago. I remember this very, very strongly. When I had the feeling that I had not really changed, I had the feeling I had remained the same. And I could only conclude either the process which I had taken, the spiritual practice, did not work, or something in me was, I had not understood it correctly, and so on. And I felt so dry during this time, so, is this an English word, arid? You know, where you feel just really dried out. That I thought perhaps I must take to another spiritual path, but I had already invested so much for about 20 years or so, and it was a crisis. It felt really that nothing made sense any longer. I felt desolate. It went really into my psychology, in the sense of I really felt dry. It didn't feel good. It was as if I was had been walking, and the ground had taken out of my feet, and I was hanging in midair, and I didn't know how to solve this situation, this dilemma. And it lasted. The same situation came back when my spiritual master left his physical body. And I felt bereft of his presence, his comforting presence. It really was not nice. Much later, I read the book, The Dark Night of the Soul. And if you really read it, I think we all have heard this expression. It's not just a temporary uncertainty or problem or something did not go right, and she said no to you when you wanted a why not try answer, you know, and not like this. It feels really like and I solved it, or not, I didn't solve it, but somehow the old me was going, and the new me was born during that time. Much later, I learned about these periods, and I heard that they are the biggest chances a human being can have, because his constructions break down like the facades in a theater which are removed by the theater crew and then there's only the naked stage ready for the next play, the next theater performance. So without deconstruction there can be there cannot be any new constructions. And as you are, let us say, when you are starting your spiritual life, you often have misconceptions on which you build your spiritual identity, your practice, and everything else. It is a great blessing if that is removed. But when you have nothing to hold on, it feels like this hanging in midair. The ground is not there, and there isn't. Nothing to really hold on. It's just you are floating somewhere. This is the real spiritual life. It's an existential transformation, and that makes the marks the difference between, you know, a temporary feel good practice and a transformative practice. But when, after this, Peter, you are the most happy person in the universe. You cannot understand, what was the problem? There was no problem. And you feel just so relieved. And it's a new birth. Like this. Yes. I hope that helped, and I hope I didn't shock you.
No, that was great. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Very powerful. Mary, please.
Hello, Sachinanda Swami. Oh. Thank you so much for your stories, and just your answer to that question was very touching and moving. Thank you for sharing that the spiritual road is not all comfortable. Thank you. My question, I've had a regular spiritual practice, a meditation practice for about 5 years. And I am a new student of the Bhagavad Gita. I've been studying for about a year, and that's really reinvigorated my relationship with God. And one of the things I've noticed is that I've really lightened up. I've become more accepting and patient, and I actually have a sense of humor now about my own shortcomings and things that don't work out really well. That I'm more able to relax. And so my question is, how do I know that I'm giving the correct effort and rigor to my practice? Am I lazy if I'm not struggling and having a hard time?
In the spiritual journey, there are various situations. I must tell you very frankly, I have been a monk and really have done a lot of effort, always rising before 4 o'clock in the morning, meditating 2 hours and many things. There are others who have done much more. I cannot claim any speciality here. But at this moment in my life, since already a few years, I wanted to say, I'm just cruising so comfortably. I'm so happy. Everyone asks me, why you look so happy? And I say, yes, this is a blessing. And so on. And I think when there are times when we are happily and relaxed, and there are times when we know, okay, it would be good to put a little bit more effort, and you will know it. But I would say congratulations that you are that there is wind in your sails that that brings you forward. It is good. It is nice. Be grateful for those moments and those times and so on. And you will see. Maybe when up there there's a decision, okay, no more wind, now she has to row again, then bring your rowing, what is it called? Please give me the word, rudders, I believe, isn't it? Or oars. Oars. Yes, then you have to bring the oars out and do a little rowing again. But now is the wind.
What a blessing. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. John, are you still with us, John? Looks like not. Scott?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Satchinandana Swami, for your presence. The question I have is, when you were very young, did you hear a call from God? And if you did, how did you recognize it was for you?
Yes, I felt that call. See, I had been brought up in a Christian context, Protestant Christian, and in North Germany, most of the Christians are Protestants, and I had prayed regularly, but then I had had left that type of life. I remember at that time I was impressed by a song, Born to be Wild, from one particular singer who was quite talented in that type of music. And I thought, okay, let's open the floodgates. And I did for 1 year wild activities. I did not harm anyone, but I wanted to explore what was there in the counterculture. I wanted to explore what all the things money can buy. I wanted to see for myself what and to fulfill some dreams. And I remember one day I felt very empty about all of this. And I did hear a voice, why have you forgotten me? Why have you put me out of your life? It was a disappointed voice. It was a tender voice. Not a demanding voice at all. And at that time, I felt, ooh, there was something I could not deny. And then I started to pray. The only prayer I knew, it was a prayer which children pray in Germany, but I was no longer a child. But I prayed, oh God, somehow make me virtuous. And then I added, and curb my wildness so that I can come back to you. There is in German you say, Lieber Gott, mach mich fromm, dass ich in den Himmel komme. That is, God, make me pious so that I can come into heavens. That's what children are told by their parents, you know. Pray that you become pious. You are too wild. And I translated that a little bit different, but it was the same prayer. Please make me virtuous and help me to give up my wildness. And I was also very disappointed with material society and the options. So, you know, a rebellious young teenager. And yeah. And the prayer was heard. Thank you for asking.
Thank you very much for replying. Thank you so much.
I think you must have something in your mind. When it's God who speaks to you, you will know it. You will know it's not your mind. It will come. It will be very often a little unexpected or unpredictable. We all have a mind, and there are certain places we can go with our minds, you know, but often a divine instruction comes from a place where you don't go on your own. And that's why it's so convincing for you, because you think I could not have made that up. You feel like this. That is the quality. The quality is, it is said of a divine instruction, is that it's amazing you. It is astonishing you. And it has some, the English word which I know is some mellow to it. That is some quality. It can be sweet, it can be forceful, but it is something out of the ordinary. So it is surprising. The Sanskrit word is chamatkar, surprising. And it is full of rasa. It has taste. It is not dry or tasteless or like a mental thing, you know, like a passing thought. It has a different taste. It has a very impactful taste. That's how you know. Now, John, your good name is John. No, Scott. Scott is yes. your good name. Scott. The divine presence in our heart, God in our heart, is always willing to address us. But are you willing to listen? Do you have a question? Do you have some urgency? Or do you feel everything is all right? I'm set up with everything and so on. He usually speaks to someone who has a sense of urgency, some concern. Something is not all right. There is a question that is not answered. There is a life that is not lived, the unlived life, one can call it. And one knows there is something that I don't live at the present moment. My life has that part which is not yet lived. I feel I'm not dead yet. I know there's something there, but I don't know what it is. And then you will get... The voice does not need to speak to you like, Scott, go today to the bus station, take a Greyhound bus to Mexico City and so on. It doesn't need to be that. It can be someone whom you meet and who acts as an agent. More often than not, that divine voice comes through a human mouth whom we meet. It happened to me the other day, but it would be too long to and not really relevant for this discussion. go into this. And you know where the voice is louder than not, louder than soft? It's when you come in this association with spiritual people. Then you hear it again, and it's louder. The volume turns up, and so on. Scott, when I look at you, I know that you know something that you are not doing at the present moment, that you should do, and that would make your whole life wonderful. I'm only saying like this. I hope my intuition works even through the computer.
I have no doubt it does. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mom?
Thank you, Maharaj, for everything you've given us. It's more than I could have asked for.
I see you. Yes. Yes, Tivi, please ask.
I've come a long way in my acceptance of God and all the implications of that for my life. And I have terrific teachers, which I'm very grateful for. There is one element that is a bit more of an obstacle for me, which is accepting the notion that this is not our home, and that this world is not really where we're meant to be. And intellectually, I understand that there is something much better, there is a reality that's much deeper. And yet there's a part of me which comes from my background and which I can imagine trying to explain to my friends that would say, but this is being ungrateful for what you have. This is missing the beauty of the reality around it. How do I go beyond that obstacle?
Wonderful. Thank you for being so open. Yes, there is value in family. There is value in, great value in a situation that allows us to function and to also be in, let me say, grow as human beings. And what will God say when you ungratefully say, this is nothing what you have just given me? It's nothing, it's not important. It's where perhaps it could, this feeling which is, I would say, good and justified, and where it could get into your way of genuine spiritual advancement, is where the question of attachment comes in, the clinging to your ways. There you will create misery for yourself and to others. When there is something that moves, some aspect in your life that you see moves in a certain way, and when you have given your best to see that it does not move in a way that you feel are not comfortable with or which you don't like at the present moment, and you try to control the movement of that person, that situation, do not see the mover behind it, then it could get into the vase. This is called in Sanskrit raga or attachment. It could be also said as clinging to desperately hold on to something that is not meant to be. And then it could get into the way. I can imagine, I have not children, but I have people to whom I'm very closely related. And sometimes these people move in ways which I don't think are right or and so on. And what I had to learn in my life is, yes, I can be a giving person, but the things don't work only the way Satchinanda Swami sees them. I had to learn this the bitter way. And I had to see that when I could let go, after, of course, I tried, that sometimes something better came out for that person, and so on. I leave you with these thoughts. I think if you wish to have a more detailed discussion on this, we would have to talk two on two, amongst four eyes and two ears only, not in a public Zoom call, because that is not the appropriate forum for such deeper or more personal questions. I hope that to some degree, however, my question has given some degree of satisfaction to your...
Yes, very much so. Thank you good. So much.
Good. Mm-hmm. But remain affectionate Tsepi. Remain the mother who holds not only your children, but you are the mother for many. many. Keep that motherly quality. I always appreciate it when I'm your guest, how everything is taken care of, and more than I could think. There's interesting literature, there is interesting thoughts, there's interesting discussions, and there is good food.
Wonderful, wonderful. So we'll come to our conclusion now. Thank you so much for being with us, everyone from wherever you have joined us. Very grateful. And Satchinanda Swami, thank you for being with us, for sharing yourself with us, which means the world. It's very, very enlivening and hopefully enlightening. Wishing everyone the very best and to be together again soon, including and especially in person coming up. Thank you.